right, good morning, everybody. Today is Tuesday, December 1st, 2015. And this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here on UCY.TV. Happy Tuesday, everybody. It is 44 degrees and very cloudy here in upstate New York. Looks like we're actually going to get up into the 50s today and the next few days. So that's surprising. It would explain why I'm sweating out here with thermals and sweatpants on and the door open. But hey, so where do we leave off yesterday? We started discussing the whole COP21 conference going on in France, the big global climate conference that is all about bringing the foot down on you and me and creating a green new world marching order. We titled the show yesterday, if I can get there, COP21 and giving up meat to, quote, save the planet. Yeah, we looked at a lot of that yesterday, and it wasn't just giving up meat. It's like giving up everything because your milk in your coffee is no longer sustainable. You better buck up there, Johnny. Save the planet by giving up that drop of cow's milk in your coffee. Make sure we milk some mealyworms. Very last thing that we looked at yesterday was the mealyworm farm. And maybe, just maybe, we can continue there today. I don't know. I did find that story, though, that I had not been able to find yesterday, talking about the sustainability of my favorite drinks. We did run across one that was a sustainable bar when I was trying to find this, but that was not the one. There's a story titled, Where is Your Favorite Drink on the Sustainability Ranks? It says, hold the milk, please. And let's admit it, we are pretty high-rate consumers, and our choices constantly affect not only us, but of course the environment at large. And this whole mentality that they're painting here, how it's all your fault. Of course, Obama, we're going to have to look at some of that today if I can get my Skype working. Obama came out yesterday and demanded that we take action. Actually, maybe we should start it there. Hold on. Let's see if we can get this all set up. Demanded we take action because it is do or die time now. Everybody's feet are to the fire, and if we don't do it, we're on the next great extinction. And we need to pull the whole world together as one. Now, honestly, I am internally conflicted over all of this because I was one of the children of the 70s and the 80s who was raised with the saving the planet mindset. I learned to recycle. I learned to point my fingers at dirty polluters. I saw the crying Indian picking up garbage. You know, I mean, that's how we were groomed. I read about the ozone hole. I followed that for a long time. CFCs knew all about it. But the problem is that what's happening right now, this whole game that they're playing, that they're turning it around, and now the whole world has to suffer because of what a handful of multi-billion dollar multinational corporations did to the planet. And this wasn't just you or me or Nana or great-grandpa because, you know, great-grandpa left the water on when he brushed his teeth. This isn't his fault. But we are all going to be made to pay. All right, let's see if we can find Obama. I used to. My Obama playlist is gone. Damn. I'm just going to have to find that now, aren't I? Oh, talk about, like, not being prepared. And there were so many from Obama yesterday, but I just tend to ignore him. You know, kind of goes in one ear and out the other. The puppet's talking again. I don't know. Anything he says, you know, is a line of shit. Again, it's like that relationship. I've talked about that many times before. When you're involved with someone and all they do is lie and tell white lies behind your back, they're always out doing something else, telling you they're doing one thing and they're doing something else, and you catch them constantly, except it's not even worth it to tell them anymore that you caught them, because it's just such a standard thing. That's what Obama's like. Like, I can't even watch him anymore because everything he says is a load of bullshit that comes out of his mouth. All right. Let's see if we can connect this up here. We might as well kick it off with his bullshit stories. I don't know. I'm torn. I'm very torn about this climate change thing. Because, number one, I definitely think we're in big trouble, planetary-wise. We are. There's no doubt about that. I don't think anyone's going to question. I mean, regardless of the climate being all screwed up, who knows if it's too getting warmer or getting colder. You know, I've seen both sides of the fence, and I've seen science on both sides of the fence. Oh, hold on. Feedback. All right, I've seen both sides of the fence, hot and cold. You know, we saw that Antarctica was just picking up ice again. We saw the, I don't know if it was the NOAA scientists, it might have been NOAA Climate, where they just reworked all of the historical data just recently. They're like, well, yeah, scientists had said there'd been a cooling period for like 20 years there back in the 90s and the 2000s. I don't remember when it was. It was probably over the last 20 years or so. And they're like, but guess what? We just looked at all the data, all of it, all the historic data, and we determined that there were just anomalies, you know, buoys and things that move around, bounce around, give bad data. And those buoys are what caused that anomaly of like 20 years saying that we were cooling. But we've recrunched all the numbers, and no, there's never been any global cooling. We are in a runaway global warming. I mean, honestly, they just like took any data that was out there, and I've seen that a few times. Like, there have been quite a number of scientists coming out saying, hey, we've been watching all this stuff, and the Earth is going into another mini ice age. Do you guys remember that? And that was just a few years ago with the solar dimming. I just saw something yesterday, too. Now, over the last 4 years, our solar collection capability is like 65% lower than what it's been in the past. So explain all that. I mean, no, there's no geoengineering or spraying shit going on in the air. No, there's nothing going on like that. That would absolutely explain why solar energy, a lot of people, Dane Wigington included, that was how they first started noticing that something was awry. Was that with their solar collection system? Every year that went by, they were getting lower and lower input from the sun. How can the sun be dimming? Well, something's going on. Anyway, I'm not going to get into, there's so many divisive opinions on climate change. And all I'm saying, regardless if it's warming, if it's cooling, if it's you, if it's me, if it's Nana, if it's the multi-billion dollar corporation, if it's all of us, the end result is that we need to go under a new 21st century rule of law. And that rule of law is going to be able to dictate everything to us under the guise of climate change. Now, who would have thought the New World Order would have been green? Because I know it wasn't me. You know, under the smiley guise of save the planet for your children. This is how they're going to be able to force all of this stuff on us. You know, because this isn't something that's like an opinion thing. They've made this so it's like a religion thing. We need to all pull together under one umbrella and be a new world order to fix it all. And if you disagree, you must be a humanity hater. You must be a selfish asshole bastard that you want milk in your coffee. Yes, that's how they're going to play it. You must be a lunatic and need some mental health services from Google Calico. Call in the hounds. All right, let's see what we can find. Here's the Obama clip I wanted to play. I think I'm connected even. All right, so this was yesterday. This is how we kicked it off yesterday morning at the climate conference in France. If he plays. He's trying. He's spinning. All right, Barry.
Nearly 200 nations have assembled here this week. A declaration that for all the challenges we face, The growing threat of climate change could define the contours of this century more dramatically than any other. And what should give us hope that this is a turning point? That this is the moment we finally determined we would save our planet, is the fact that our nations share a sense of urgency about this challenge and a growing realization that it is within our power to do something about it. Our understanding of the ways human beings disrupt the climate advances by the day. 14 of the 15 warmest years on record have occurred since the year 2000.
Now, that's amazing. And yeah, it has been warming, at least over the last few years, I know. But, you know, my summers haven't been roasting. And here up in the Northeast, we had that trough all summer. So it was actually pretty pleasant here this summer. We had a pretty cold winter. Last winter, we had, if you guys remember, I do time and temperature. I don't think I do time anymore, but I do temperature. I used to do the time at the top of the show. But I do temperature every day, temperature and like cloud cover, just to kind of give you an indication as to what's going on up in the Northeast from someone with feet on the ground. And last winter, I had a majority of my winter days were like low crispy digits. And I mean, I think we went close to 4 months up here, maybe longer, without ever breaking freezing. And many of those days were in like negative numbers, remember? So I don't know who says that we're warming here. You know, Obama's like, well, the last, you know, 14 years have been the warmest on record ever. Wasn't it amazing? How many of these never-before-seen, first-time-evers have we seen just in the last few years? And doesn't it sound like a broken record to you? I mean, I would have to say, despite all the hype, it would have to be over the last 4 years I started to really see some oddball-y things going on with our weather. You know, we had some of the biggest tornado outbreaks. That was in 2011 across the plains. We had Texas on fire. Remember that? Like long before the California drought, we had mega droughts down in Texas where freaking Texas was burning up. A friend and I remember looking at the map and it's like, oh my God, it looks like Texas is completely on fire. It was when you had the plutonium waste sitting down at Los Alamos. I think that's what that is in New Mexico there, where they keep all the Manhattan Project waste right down near the WIP site, where they're no longer able to move it to be stored. But they had it all sitting out in the ditch while the wildfires were going on. And I remember them going, oh, what do we do with all these barrels of liquid plutonium crap or whatever's in here as the fires are coming toward us? I mean, now none of that's happening. Now this year, so much for global warming. Texas, though, was warm. They got more water than who knows how long. I mean, it was historic rainfall this year in that state. The aquifers, I just saw a map the other day. There's only like four little spots in Texas that have any type of glimmer of drought, even in the beginning stages anymore. So, boop, fixed in 4 years from, and they were ready to go into like stage four, if I'm not mistaken. Stage four, like severe drought. They were already getting ready to pass that toilet to tap water, which, by the way, people, you know, just because it hasn't been talked about in your community, don't think that's not going to happen. I did a story, it was probably last year about this time for Anti-Media on San Francisco and toilets to tap. And because of the drought, all of a sudden, drinking recycled water out of the toilet doesn't seem like such a bad idea. Now, honestly, I thought we were always doing that, but I guess it gets processed way more and goes out for brown water versus clean. But somewhere along the way, it's going to be the same water. But, you know, here's one of my issues for toilet to tap. Toilet to tap is just like the there will be no meat. You'll be eating bug protein. You know what? We shouldn't have to be sucking on toilet pipes to get a clean drink of water. I shouldn't have to be eating mealyworms grown in a hive on my counter when I want a little crunch and pizzazz, a little bit of protein with my salad. Because I don't know, it's all I can afford. Those good old mealyworms. It's all the climate change mantra will allow us to eat here in the future. All right, I'm just rambling now. Let's listen to a little bit more of Brother Barry.
And 2015 is on pace to be the warmest year of all. No nation, large or small, wealthy or poor, is immune to what this means.
No nation.
This summer, I saw the effects of climate change firsthand in our northernmost state, Alaska, where the sea is already swallowing villages and eroding shorelines, where permafrost thaws and the tundra burns.
You know, I don't know. Again, you know, I have so many arguments to all this bullshit and stuff that comes out of Obama's mouth. I mean, we've been watching research very closely for 4 years on all the different things going on in the upper Pacific, northern Pacific oceans on the floor. You know, Dane has been one of the voices that's been calling out this global warming versus cooling thing. I think he's on the warming thing. I know at one point there have been questions about cooling. We talked about that. But one of the things that Dane's been talking about since the very beginning, and I remember the day I saw the report, the Russian scientists had come out and said that they had discovered this massive methane hydrate sink that was up in near Alaska under the ocean that was bubbling. It was starting to thaw out. It had been locked at the bottom of the ocean via permafrost, and now that things were heating up, it was starting to escape. Methane is a very, very potent greenhouse gas, much more potent than CO2. And I mean, lots of questions about CO2. Like, why are we worried about CO2? Trees require CO2. CO2 is a natural byproduct of us breathing. I mean, that just never made sense to me. Granted, I mean, if the entire environment was filled with it, but let's plant 10 million more trees then. Let's stop cutting down the rainforest. I mean, that just sounds like a great plan. Especially, you know, they talked about terraforming Mars with millions of trees, because Mars' atmosphere is also filled with a lot of carbon dioxide. So feed them, give them trees. Trees will be happier than pigs sitting there sucking up all that CO2 and let it just make tons of oxygen. That never made sense. But anyway, back to the methane hydrate. So we have now, it's been confirmed beyond the Russian scientists. I've seen a few reports now about the methane hydrate that is starting to be released because of the permafrost melting. And there is speculation as to what is causing this. Some people are saying, oh, it's rising ocean temperatures. But there are others out there that are talking about the different UV rays and that some of our problems have to do with the ozone holes. That I got to tell you guys, I challenge somebody, and not challenge in a bad way, in a good way, because I've looked. I'm a researcher, and I do pretty well at it. Spent my whole life doing it. And I have not been able to find accurate, up-to-date ozone hole information from anywhere in the central part of the planet. Like, you know, where we live. I don't care about the North Pole. I don't care about the South Pole or the extreme upper and lower parts of the Northern and Southern Hemisphere and any of the countries that are there associated. I went the central part of the country, like the heartland through the equator, showing me what the UV radiation is, how many places we have like UV 15 where it should be roasting your skin off. And I want to see what type of issues we have going on there, because I think there's a lot more going on than what we're being told. So anyway, back to this methane hydrate. So we've had this mass melting now off of up in, I don't know, whatever you want to call it, the Arctic Circle, up near past Alaska in there. But they've also found it off of Ireland to the north, where they have some drilling platforms. And they've been experiencing it there as well. And what's horrifying is that methane is not a gas that we breathe, really. I mean, maybe in trace amounts, I don't even know. But it's a very, very potent greenhouse gas, odorless. If you breathe methane, it'll kill you. They think that in the past, there have been historic stories of entire cities found dead in the morning. And they've postulated in some of those cases that it was methane that had escaped from the ground and then sunk into the valley. And, of course, the people were sleeping. They couldn't smell it. And, boop, it's poisonous. And hence, they're all dead in the morning. I mean, if there was a mass methane, mass expulsion, and Dane, back in the early days, I will never forget that interview. It's still up on YouTube, on the UCY YouTube channel. Dane did an interview with Madison Rupert and talked at length about the UVB and the UVC, the ozone hole, the UV, the UVB, because right, A is what makes you burn, I think, or is it heat? B makes you burn pretty bad. C will kill you. C kills everything. C kills life. C, B, UVC, you can use to sterilize. Those are some of those Ebola bots. That's exactly what they're using, UVC. UVC does not, according to NOAA, UVC rays do not make it through our ozone and the protective layers of our atmosphere to the lower atmosphere. Because if it did, it would sanitize life. Now that's pretty scary. But they are finding with meters, there's a lot more UVB getting through, causes a lot more burns, potentially a lot more skin cancers. But what if UVC is getting into? As we're seeing forests and trees and things dying here, that of course is all about climate change. Maybe, just maybe, there's a lot more going on here than just trying to keep the CO2 levels down. And that's what I mean. Like, they act like this is such a simplistic solution, and not really, but they're like, oh, well, the planet's heating up, so hey, we just got to turn our lives upside down because that's going to make a difference. Well, what if there's a mega ozone hole that we're being sprayed with high level UVB and potentially UVC rays that's causing a large part of our problem? Or, I don't know, how about the fact that geologic activity seems to be picking up everywhere? Not just earthquakes. Recently, there's been some big swarms, but volcanic activity. You know, I used to follow volcanoes and earthquakes very closely. And one of the things I noticed, and there was a NASA satellite survey done at one point over the last few years, but almost every single volcano on planet Earth is waking up. And that wasn't me saying that. That was NOAA saying that, or NASA, I'm sorry. Another four-letter acronym that starts with that. I'm close. But they did a satellite sky survey, and they had discovered that even long, dormant volcanoes for millions of years seem to be having activity. Now, I remember as a child, I was very into alternative energy. I saw back when I was little, Three Mile Island, which I grew up in southern western New York. So it wasn't too far away from me. So I paid attention, and I was just a little kid when that happened. I was always into alternative energies and trying to, you know, be a good custodian for the planet. I totally lost my train of thought. I was reading the story here about Obama stepping up on climate change. Whatever. All right, let's listen to the end of this. And we'll continue on. So long and the short of it is, oh, I know the volcanic thing. So all these volcanoes are heating up. Well, I remember learning as a kid, you know, also they were warning us that the Ruskies were always coming. They're going to drop a bomb on us. Up until like the mid-80s, we were always worried about Russia dropping a bomb. And I was another one of those kids that grew up doing the fallout shelter at school when they had an air raid drill and you covered your face and stood against the brick wall and then hoped that you didn't get blown up by a nuke. You know, I mean, what a way to raise a kid. And that was school conditioning us for that. But they talked about nuclear winters and, you know, how horrible it would be. We wouldn't be able to survive because we wouldn't be able to grow anything because there wouldn't be any sunlight. Because it would be all blocked out because of the big nuclear explosions. But, oh, you know what else can cause nuclear winter? And I learned this in all my geology classes I took in college. Oh, volcanic eruptions can cause global dimming. And so we've had, I mean, seriously, if you go to the Earth and Sky Tools on UCY's website, there's a tab called Earth and Sky Tools. I think I have volcanic activity listed there as well. It's all my favorite tools that I don't have time to follow anymore. So I've launched them all and released them into the wild for you guys to go check some stuff out. But there is a volcanic activity map there. There's a couple. There's the earthquake feed. And then there's a volcanic activity section. And there's a few disaster sections. But if you go look, I mean, guys, we've had volcanic eruptions ad nauseum over the last few years. Maybe it's always been that way, but I don't ever remember, you know, once a week having another big volcano erupt on some other island. You don't think that that has something to do with blocking out sun, trapping in gases? I mean, if you read anything about what nuclear winter is, it's very similar to what we're talking about with temperatures going up. If we've created this cap that's covering our atmosphere so the cold air can no longer escape, you know, just like at night when it's a crystal clear night and you can see all the stars, man, it is freezing. But when it's a cloudy night and it's getting ready to rain, guess what? It's usually pretty warm. It's the same situation that's going on here. So regardless, I call bullshit on all this. I'm telling you, they are just using it as a convenient excuse to make themselves look like they give two shits to then lock it all down and be able to have justification to stick every one of their every one of their 10 fingers into all your personal private fucking business and demand that they have control over it. And that's what bugs me. I don't know if I can make him play anymore. It's all frozen. Come on, Barry. You just ruined my setup and delivery. I don't know. All right, it's all... My whole browser's frozen. Oh, we're going to have to do the song that's going through my head. I think it's called The Happy Elephant. Oh, I'm trying to stay calm while everything is frozen. Well, no, someone's calling. Sorry, guys. I'm not taking calls. Not taking calls. Can't do it. I got 5 stories lined up and I'm locked up. Oh, I'm going to get mad because that's what happens. And I only got half a show left. Let's go. Let's go. Doot, doot, doot. Eventually, Chrome will say, let's go. Well, I don't know. I might have to go to the story over here. All right. Well, we're going to skip Barry for now. until he decides to get his act in gear. Well, it's like my two browsers now are flashing between each other, like they don't know which one's active. I don't know. All right. Oh, this is frustrating. All right, so let's get back to the story that I couldn't find yesterday, but I talked about, and now we're going to talk about it. Where does your favorite drink sit in the sustainability ranks? Well, hey, let's admit it. We are all pretty high-rate consumers, and our choices constantly affect not only us, but the environment at large. And there's only so much we could do to limit our negative impact on our planet before succumbing to green fatigue. Hold on. The whole machine is like going into attack mode here. I don't know what's going on. I got to try to disconnect myself. There we go. I don't know. Skype is locked. The browser's locked. All the stories I was doing for the show, yep, locked. Oh, I hate you, computer. And this is the new computer. It's now got a real it's got a real browser problem. All right, anyway. So we succumb to the green fatigue. Still, our individual choices do matter, even if the overall contribution is tiny. And if you're curious about leading a more sustainable lifestyle, you will be interested in some of the surprising facts about the food and drink we consume nearly every day. So let's start with one of the world's most valuable crops. You've probably heard that coffee production comes with a slew of associated troubles. Traditionally, coffee used to grow in the shade of trees, boosting biodiversity and preventing soil erosion. But the high-yielding and the sun-loving species grown today are contributing to the deforestation and requiring tons of water, according to one regularly cited Dutch study from 2007. A standard cup of brewed coffee with 7 grams of coffee in it in the Netherlands, which is a coffee-loving country, costs about 140 liters of water for one cup of coffee. That's the amount of water required for the production of beans that contribute to the said cup from harvest to processing, washing, roasting, and so on. Meanwhile, a cup made with just 3 grams of tea, black, green, or oolong, uses roughly 34 liters of water. The authors also note that the additional environmental cost of coffee and tea is that coffee and tea plantations often contribute to deforestation, erosion, and river pollution. However, a water footprint is largely related to economic costs, and these numbers come from calculating the quote-unquote virtual water content of a product. And I'm going to predict that we're going to be hearing a lot more about future virtual water contents of a product in regards to whether or not it is allowable for us to consume. Water footprint is largely related to economic costs, and these numbers come from calculating the quote-unquote virtual water content of a product, which some experts point out is inadequate for measuring the context with factors such as production methods and local water scarcity. Yeah, let's make it even worse. You know, here's something else I don't get. With all this gene editing, and I found, by the way, guys, but I'm on the wrong topic today, but I found Jennifer Doudna, the good old CRISPR lady. She did a 101, and we're going to do it tomorrow. I found a Jennifer Doudna CRISPR technology 101 that we're going to look at. But, you know, with all this gene editing that now they're about ready to make $1 billion, they're fighting over patents, they're talking about how wonderful and we're going to cure Alzheimer's and cancer. I've asked this before. If we have such a water scarcity or shortage, Somebody out there with a physics degree or a chemical engineering degree, please explain to me if we're the blue planet and we're covered with a majority of water, yet there's water scarcity everywhere. I mean, regardless of the desalinization and all these other issues that we have to deal with the majority of water, there still is water everywhere. We have ways to get rid of the salts or whatever and make it drinkable. But even if and only if, what if the Earth really was running out of water? Like another NASA study that I just saw this year in 2015, NASA says, according to their satellite surveys, the Earth is running out of water. I haven't seen any evidence of it, but hey, it's NASA. Take it with what it's worth. But even if planet Earth were running out of water, how come we can create nanobots that can target tumors and clean up your genes? We can splice and dice all kinds of traits, human genes into cows to produce human milk. Why can't we splice a hydrogen and two oxygens? Can we or can we not make water? Is that kind of like the United States making it to the moon? Like, it just seems to me H2O, since it is the basis for all life forms, the majority on planet Earth, and they think for a large majority of life forms, it probably would be. Simple molecule. Why can't we make water? Why is water scarcity an issue at all? Why can't we be pulling trace amounts of hydrogen and oxygen out of the environment? And I know it takes a lot of energy to slam them together, but I'm sure with all the amazing magical technology that this technocracy that we've been funding with our tax dollars that's getting ready to usurp all of our personal freedoms, why with all this magic technology, the magitron, can we not create water? And being out of water shouldn't be an issue. There should be some simple, easy way. And we've seen way, way, way back, even I think it was in Saudi or one of the Middle Eastern countries, there's lots of desert. That's a consumeristic society, more Western based. They were collecting water with those billboards. They were like big dehumidifiers. And they literally could collect the water out of the air. It's just like when you have a dehumidifier down in your basement, you got to go once a day and dump that big jug of water in back. I mean, where do you think that water's coming from? Pulling it right out of the air. Anyway, let's get back to the carbon footprint of my coffee and tea. It says, so now we can look into the carbon footprint of our everyday items as measured in grams of carbon dioxide equivalent, or CO2e for short. And what's interesting about them talking about the carbon dioxide equivalent was a few years ago, we had Mr. Billy Gates showing up at a TEDx conference talking about needing to bring the carbon quotient down to zero. And we listened to clips of that. If you haven't seen it, I don't know, search Bill Gates carbon on YouTube, and I'm sure you'll find it. And he talked about a lot of things. He talked about vaccines and how to bring the population down and birth control and how we need to bring the carbon quotient down to zero, because the blue dot's not going to make it unless we do that. All right, so that's about where we're at right now. Anyway, it says it's also not a dead precise measurement, this carbon dioxide equivalent, CO2e, because so many individual variables go into our consumption, but at least it gives you some idea of how much your daily caffeine is contributing to, oh, global warming. Yes! Feel fucking guilty with your first cup of morning coffee every day. Because I know I do. I mean, seriously now. And I'm not going to say Because really, this is kind of the core issue here. The core issue is that the corporations, the plantations that are producing the coffee and the tea are doing so unsustainably. They're hacking down lots of the forest. They're burning a lot of the trees to make room to grow more coffee. They're selling off the Amazon rainforest. And the profit motivated them to do that. But shame on any of these other countries. Shame on any of these other individuals who didn't have a conscience, who didn't have the wherewithal to think that, gee, maybe this isn't such a good idea. I just don't think that just because I drink coffee, I should be now held directly responsible and made to suffer because they couldn't figure out how to do it right. They couldn't figure out, like a good farmer, any good farmer knows that when you till your land, you need to rotate your crops. You can't keep growing the same thing on the same plot of land every single year because it's not going to work. Your ground nutrients are going to be all eaten up and you're going to have issues. It's not going to grow the next year. So you got to rotate. I mean, that's good, being a good custodian, a good farmer. And we should have always all been good custodians of our planet. I've tried to be. And any chance that I get, like I said, since I was a kid, I've been aware of green issues. I try not to litter. When I go places, I take in and I bring my stuff out. I enjoy wildlife. I don't spray pesticides. I've never sprayed a pesticide outside my house or inside my house here. You know, there are many things that I do to make sure I keep at least my local environment sustainable for me and my family and as safe as it could possibly be. But why do I have to suffer for my morning coffee or be made to feel bad or guilty or like I did something wrong when I didn't do anything wrong? I'm consuming what they gave me. I mean, if there had been an issue, isn't there a thing now like when they import from some of these third world countries, there's a term that they use when you have coffee that from like South America that's been verified not to use slave labor or whatever, they sell it under a headline, a title. I don't remember what the name of the whole group is, but shouldn't they have been doing that all along? I don't know. It just aggravates me that all of a sudden it's everybody's fault. So let's get back here. So back to our coffee causing global warming. We can find out our carbon dioxide equivalent of anything and determine whether or not we're doing damage to the environment. So according to carbon emissions expert Mike Berners-Lee, if you make a cup of coffee or black tea and boil only the water that you need, that will be a 21 gram carbon dioxide equivalent, which isn't too bad, they say. But, as soon as you add milk, which of course comes from methane belching cows, your hot beverage suddenly becomes a lot less carbon friendly. Someone is literally dissecting the carbon friendliness of my morning's favorite drink under the guise of climate change. If you make a white tea, filter coffee, or instant coffee, or you don't overfill the kettle, then the milk will typically account for around 2/3 of the total footprint, more than boiling water and cultivating tea put together, says Berners-Lee. Hence, a large latte can contribute a whopping 340 grams of carbon dioxide equivalent for one latte. Well, sounds like they're going to have to close all the Starbucks. Starbucks is a horrible offender, apparently, under this definition. Meanwhile, we found out yesterday, too, the United States and China are the two biggest polluters. China's in the middle of having a smog apocalypse right now as they're at the climate change. And oh, did you see, while this was all going on, the IMF came out and announced yesterday that the yuan is now the elite, I think they called it the elite preferred reserve currency or something like that. So put on a seatbelt, because I don't know what that means. I mean, the reserve currency is a big deal. I don't know if that means, though, the IMF is going to start allowing international countries to trade in the yuan. I don't know if that means that they're planning to eventually displace the dollar. But it just seems interesting to me that while this entire conference is going on, all about climate change, we got China here, of course, who is the worst polluter and offender, as they're producing all of our Chinese junk that's being shipped back here. It sucked out all of our manufacturing. And now, starting to process chicken. Chinese chicken. We now have the IMF come out and talk about how the yuan is the new elite reserve currency. So, I don't know. I need to dig more into that. That was late last night when I ran across that. But anyway, back to climate change. So, we have China and the United States being the world's two biggest offenders. And they said in a story we read yesterday that the United States population in its meat eating, I believe, because that's what we talked about yesterday, was eating meat. Our meat eating in the United States contributed more global warming than every single car exhaust that's running on planet Earth. Now, and that's their justification as to why meat is no longer sustainable, because, you know, you damn Americans with your beef and apparently your coffee now too are causing some major issues for the climate. No, it has nothing to do with natural cycles or anything like that. El Nino. No, it's all you consumeristic crazies who don't know how to stop when buying things. It has nothing to do with Bernays back in the early 1900s, completely brainwashing us into this consumeristic society that has now become the society that we are, that doesn't give two shits about the environment. It's all about instant gratification. No! We're the disposable society of the 70s. All right, I'm running out of time here, and I got a couple stories I want to hit really hard after this. So anyway, let's finish this. So we have this carbon dioxide equivalent that they're going to start measuring everything in. My coffee is off the charts because I use milk. Says, meanwhile, the environmental impact of our food is somewhat more difficult to determine precisely because it often boils down to macronutrients rather than individual foodstuffs. As philosophy professor Janet Stemwendel wrote at her Scientific American blog in 2011, quote, without specifics about what you were eating, how it was fed or produced, and how much fuel was consumed getting it to you, it is impossible to hold up a kilogram of protein from one source and a kilogram of protein from another and say anything very sensible about which contributes more to global warming, unquote. So there you go. After they're pointing to bugs being a good solution because you can grow them right on your countertop in your little buggy hive versus the cows that are out on Farmer Joe's pasture. She says that it's difficult. I would still have to say probably bugs grown in your own home would have a less carbon footprint, but I'm not eating bugs. Sorry. Says it might be that tofu costs less than beef, but perhaps the cow was grown locally and fed grass, while tofu was made from processed soybeans, GMO soybeans, and shipped for thousands of miles. And you need a whole lot of data to make sure that you are getting the most sustainable choice. Well, bravo for bringing that up. This is why it is not worth despairing about your grocery shipping yet, until the global rulers tell us to and are able to control everything we see and eat and what's available based upon carbon quotient. And why the most sound sustainability advice is simply to eat lower on the food chain, i.e. fruits and vegetables. To buy local, which is what I try to do for as long as we can up here in the tundra. And buy fresh to avoid processing, steps that laden with carbon and water footprint. Yes. And it also makes for a healthier diet. All right. So I just wanted to tell you that they were bitching about my coffee, but here we go. So here's the coup de grace. Put the cherry on top. While this climate conference is going on, there's an announcement made this morning, early hours. Yes, it says Bill Gates has launched a multi-billion dollar initiative to fund new clean energy technologies with the likes of who? Oh, Mark Zuckerberg, Alibaba CEO Jack Ma. Yes, that's like the big Amazon junk seller, China's online marketplace. And that guy is a rich billionaire. So we got Bill Gates, Mark Zuckerberg, Alibaba CEO Jack Ma, Virgin Atlantic Richard Branson, among the band of almost 30 high-profile investors who are committed to taking clean energy ideas out of the lab and into the marketplace to cut the cost of sustainable energy once and for all. Now, the scariest part about this is we discovered that our National Synthetic Biology Plan program is falling under the guise of the Department of Energy. And that's where a lot of this mad science gone mad being developed and funded is all happening. And we also found out that as part of like the precision medicine, where they're using a lot of the synthetic biology besides energy, this precision medicine initiative is also being hopped upon by the tech billionaires with their longevity projects. And there's so many of them that we've talked about, as well as all of their new healthcare endeavors to try to cure death. I'm reading here too, Jeff Bezos, who is the head honcho of Amazon, is also involved in this as well. So check this out. Announced at the 2015 United Nations Climate Conference in Paris yesterday, this brand new Breakthrough Energy Coalition. So that's what they're calling themselves, these billion-dollar tech titans, now all jumping on fixing the energy problem. The Breakthrough Energy Coalition brings together governments, universities, billionaire entrepreneurs, investment fund managers, and tech CEOs from around the world. Wow, doesn't this sound exactly like what we were just reading with all the tech titans pulling together to try to defy death? Yes. See, they're taking it all over. Guys, we're being usurped on every level right now. Yeah, it's all being done for the good of you and me and our kids and our grandkids. But it's not. We are being usurped. That's why this means a lot to me. I lived, ate, and breathed the tech industry for 25 years. It's my industry that's hijacking us. It's hijacking everything. It's going to turn it into a transhumanist little chip to be able to monitor, detect, and destroy. Anyway. So this Breakthrough Energy Coalition brings together governments and universities, billionaire entrepreneurs, investment fund managers, and tech CEOs from around the world that recognize the huge investment needed to replace fossil fuels with modes of cheap, sustainable energy production. And it's just in time, whoo, as the world is expected to be using 50% more energy by 2050 than it does today. While the intent of the initiative sounds noble, it hasn't attracted billions in investments because it aims to mitigate the effects of climate change and bring the energy to 1 billion people in the world who are currently living without electricity. Bill Gates says the primary goal of the coalition is as much to accelerate progress on clean energy as it is to make a profit. Ding, da-da, ding, 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 ding. So, yes, it's official. Sustainable energy just isn't good for the environment. It's set to become one of the best investments you can make for your dollar. Guys, this is exactly what they said about precision medicine. You know, it's really disgusting. We are being usurped again, not only for total control, but this is the ultimate moneymaker. It's going to be on you and me and disaster collateral. It says renewable technologies we have today, like wind and solar, yes, have made a lot of progress. But we need to get to zero carbon energy future. And that sounds a lot like Bill Gates' TED discussion. But given the scale of the challenge, we need to be exploring many different paths. And that means that we also need to invest in new approaches, says Gates. Gates has published a paper, and he would be very excited to present his case for investing in energy innovation. And you can download it on this page that I'm at. At the same time is a second new initiative, and it's being called Mission Innovation. It's a commitment by 19 countries, including the U.S., China, and India, to invest more in research on clean energy by signing this pledge. The countries have committed to double their spending on sustainable energy technologies over the next 5 years. I don't know, guys. It's pretty scary to me that we got Gates, Zuckerberg, Branson, Bezos, and I saw a list somewhere, Jack Ma, George Soros. There's no word on how many of the members of the coalition, which include Jack Ma, Meg Whitman, George Soros, billionaire environmentalist Tom Steyer. And I'm sure that there's a lot more. We'll have to dig into this tomorrow because this came out just late last night as I was getting ready to crash out. But anyway, guys, if you can believe it, the show's already over. I don't even know how that happened. It went way too fast. All right, guys, well, it's Tuesday. Make sure you stick around. There's lots of live radio today. Mr. Kevin Blanche is up next at 7 p.m. tonight. We have Ron with Game On Live at 7 p.m. Eastern. Our Interesting Times with Tim Kelly at 8, Primer Time Live with Michael and Nick at 9. Here we go. Geoengineering Watch this week with Dana 10 and Anti-Media Radio with S.M. Gibson at 11. All right, guys, everyone have an awesome Tuesday, and I will catch up with you tomorrow. Take care.